Sunday! Every Sunday, side by side of the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Ray Guarino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Hear relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrill to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disasters as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Eat, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Even!
You know, if you need to go out and mow the lawn, we'll understand.
I have a little while. What is that behind you? Is that a New Yorker convertible?
That is something I actually wanted to talk to you about. It is a Chrysler 300.
Oh, it's a 300.
But it started out as a Newport.
Okay.
And this is what it looks like now. I have a shot of it now.
Oh man, look at that.
So that's how it looks now.
That is beautiful.
Thank you. I bought that out of Rocky Point, Long Island. It sat in the garage. It was in that spot for 30 years with the hood up. And the last time it was registered insured was 1989. So, and then I literally dragged it. It was a piece of furniture when I got it. It didn't run, didn't stop. Wow. So we dragged it back to my house here in Trumbull, mm-hmm. and I put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Right.
But the funny thing about it, and this is why I really wanted to pick your brain on this, the car, somebody, not me, somebody took this car as a Newport and hung the 300 bumper on it, put the 300 grill on it, put the 300, the rear tail lights, was right. really setting this thing up for it to be a 300. And I'm like, and it doesn't have a 440 in it. It's only got a 383.
Uh-huh.
But I was wondering, there are cars like this, and not to be unscrupulous, because the reason why I bought it was it's got 63,000 original miles on it.
Right.
And it's got very little rust on it. Very little.
Is that the original paint?
No, it was gold. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, it started out gold.
Right.
So whomever, someone really wanted to do this job. And then when I bought the car, now I'm thinking, I'm going to spend just as much money to make it back into a Newport as I will to make it into a 300.
Right.
Because I don't have the Newport bumpers. I don't have the Newport grill. Yeah. If I had all that stuff available, I probably would have turned it back into a Newport and gone along with it.
What's the difference in the bumpers, Chris?
The bumpers on the Newport have the hole cutouts. In this down below for the signal lights, where the 300 bumper, that is clean because the signal lights are on either end of the grill, basically.
Right.
So they relocated them to the corners of the grill. So they left that clean down below. So they're kind of tough to find. Well, not really tough, but they're tougher than a Newport bumper to find or a New Yorker. Okay. New Yorkers are the same way. They have the signal lights in the bumper. So, my question to you, Steve, is what would something like that, and like not being unscrupulous and saying, look, this car was converted, but what would you think a car like this would go for? Because it's got a lot of good going for it, but it's a little fugazi.
Well, it's a clone.
It's a clone.
Yeah. You know, I have my opinions on those things. Other people would disagree with me, but the way I look at it, is there are certain cars where the intrinsic value is in the originality. So if you were talking about a Chevelle SS and somebody did, you know, people make Chevelle SSs, you know, out of Malibus all the time,
right.
Or out of plain Chevelles, whatever it happens to be. And that has a huge impact on value, obviously.
Sure.
With a car like this, because the value in this car is really more in the condition of the car than the originality, I wouldn't really think that changing that cloning or making a tribute, whatever you want to call it, a 300 out of it, I don't really think it would add or detract from the value of the car.
That's good.
Yeah, I think it would just sell for the value of a nice, clean convertible, you know, with very little rust. And I think me personally, and I think most people would agree with me, I think the 300 bumpers are nicer looking. And if I, you know, because I do so many appraisals, the word comparable goes through my head all the time. If somebody showed me, what did it start out as, did you say?
A Newport.
Yeah. Right. So if somebody showed me a Newport convertible or a Newport convertible with the 300 bumpers and said, you can take your choice of either one for the same price, right, I would take this one. So I wouldn't be willing to pay more for it, but I would take that one because I liked it better. So that's the way I would look at it.
That makes sense.
That does make a lot of sense. And I wish we were on the air with that. Next time you're on, I'm going to ask you again. So,
Steve, let me show you what I found in Limbrook.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem.
I found this sitting in Limbrook right by Mike's shop a couple weeks ago while there were no cars on the road.
Yeah, now that's legit. That's a legit puppy.
That's the same year. That's a Chrysler 300 convertible.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I can't see it for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, you can't see it?
You can't see it.
Were you able to see us on the screen?
Yes, I can see both of you guys. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's all right. I was sharing a screen. If you can't see it.
I don't, my wife just walked out, but she would know how to do it. She could.
Okay.
I don't know how to do this stuff. Okay, whatever.
All right. Well, then Ray came upon a white one.
Yeah.
That is literally sitting off the sidewalk in front of a garage, and it's a tattered white 69, black top. Looks like there's a black gut. But it's just sitting there. It's just, and Ray said, looks like it's been sitting there for many, many years.
It's got it's got a black California plate on it too.
Yeah,
so
it's a black plate car.
Yeah.
It's an import.
Yeah, it's an import. Yeah. Wow. So that's something that intrigued me when I looked at the car and under all the dust, I'm like, something's up with this thing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't. I mean, the price was right.
Oh,
I think I paid.
You can't get hurt. But you did that work. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I even paid a little bit too much for it. But it still had 63,000 original miles on it. And I'm like, I didn't do any real engine work to it other than fire it back up. I had a bent rod. That was the only that was the only mishap. But it runs and drives like a $63,000 mile Chrysler.
And they were luxury cars. They drive beautifully.
Yeah. Oh, it really is nice on the road. Yeah. The front end is tight. The only thing is a lot of the rubber parts are starting to crack. So I'm just keeping them filled with grease until I can get a chance to get under there and break it all apart and do it, put a decent front end. And I haven't gotten it on the highway yet. I just take it around the neighborhood, basically, you know, on the two laners up and down the hills here.
Well,
and
it's got beautiful. Thank you.
And it's even got manual brakes, which scares me a little because it's like stopping an Airstream trailer. But
a friend of mine says, you have to plan your stops.
Yes.
So I have to plan your stops.
You have to plan them. Exactly.
Does it have a dual res or a single res master cylinder?
No, it does have a dual res.
Okay, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still the irony was I bought a lot of the parts at Rock Auto to rebuild the brakes, and they came to like I think everything came to less than $100. It was amazing. Like master cylinder, brake pads, all four slave cylinders, like everything. It was
incredible.
$98. I was like, okay.
A friend of mine had that exact same car when we were in college, carbon copy car.
Really?
One year we took a couple of boats. We towed our boats behind us. We went up to Lake George. And at the time I was driving a little Subaru station wagon, you know, four-wheel drive.
Sure.
And he was towing his boat with that car, which he towed all over the place. And when he brought it up to Lake George and put it on the ramp was slippery. And when it was time to take the boat out of the water, the car didn't go into the water, but the rear tires were spinning on the slime, so he couldn't get it out. So I hooked up a chain from my Subaru to his Chrysler, which still had the boat on the back. I pulled both of them out with the Subaru. And then here's the funny part. He took the boat up. There's at Lake George, there's a ramp. There's a ramp that goes up to a parking lot at the top of a hill that overlooks the lake. And he backed the boat up to the top of the hill into the parking spot, And as I'm watching him unhook it, it was like, Mark, don't unhook it. And he unhooked it, and the boat went off the cliff with the trailer down the hill and into the lake.
Oh, my gosh.
Right in front of all of us. Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yep. It was quite the sight to see.
Oh, just wave at it. Bye.
Nothing you could do. And then the outdrive on the boat dug into the mud and the boat flipped over. It was pretty dramatic.
Oh, I wish we were on the air.
Oh, it was very dramatic. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's hysterical.
And the first words out of his mouth, because he split the boat with his brother, the first words out of his mouth were, uh-oh, what am I going to tell my brother? I got to come up with something.
Yeah, I boned big time. That's what I'm going to come up with. Yep. Oh, my God. That's hysterical. Wow. Holy smokes.
That's a beautiful car.
Thank you. I've only had it now about a year. Yeah. I sold the TR6. Mm-hmm. And actually, I had a laugh because a guy showed up. Literally through, I had it up on Craigslist for $8,400. Mm-hmm. And a guy showed up and said, would you take $8,000? And I was all ready to start negotiating. And then he went, cash now.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Let's not think about it.
I'm sorry.
What year was the TR6?
74.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
So I had to, here's the just to make a long story longer, I wanted to buy something with a back seat because my daughter likes convertibles now.
Right. So, sounds familiar.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I used to take her out in the TR6, but my wife would be waving like, goodbye. Uh-huh. So I need something with a back seat. So when I bought this, now here's my wife. She goes and looks in the back seat. She goes, where's the shoulder strap for the seat belt, for the child seat? And I'm like, it's a 69. There is no shoulder strap. She's like, well, we can't use this car. That conversation led me to go buy a 93 Chrysler LeBaron convertible, which I didn't want to buy, but I figured it's got a shoulder strap and the car was 7 minutes up the road. I figured, okay, I'll go buy that. So I bought that and dragged that home.
That's how my freshly painted 81 Fiat Spider turned into a 71 Challenger convertible that needed everything. Same story. Same. Well, it was the same damn thing.
No, it's funny.
Besides being a Chrysler and an import car in each story and a car guy, the only other thing, and this is what I claim, is the real glue that binds them is a wife.
Well, and a kid.
When I got married, shortly after I got married, I had a 1995 Pontiac Firehawk. And, you know, it's a nice car. It's a quick car.
Yeah. And
my wife would not let me put my son in the car because she thought it was an unsafe car. She drove a new Dodge Intrepid four-door. When we went online to, I guess it's the NHTSA or whatever the website to check the safety of the cars, the Firehawk was better than the Dodge Intrepid.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It was actually better than the Intrepid. Yeah, so wife was the common denominator again.
Yeah. You see a trend here, right?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing.
Wow. It is amazing. Although I'd much rather have the Challenger than this thing. But
my initial response is yes. But you know what? If you have a family with a kid, there's nothing like a big convertible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah.
And I tell you, Steve, you know this better than anybody. Try and find a big convertible that's less than $15,000.
Yeah.
Well, something that runs and drives.
You know, what happened to me when that happened, I decided to sell that Fiat, and I went up. I said, okay, you know, I want something with a back seat and a convertible. And I just had a whim at that time. I wanted something like out of a 50s car. I thought it would have been really cool, a 50s convertible.
Right.
And I went to my buddy, Lauren, who works at Colvin, and he's a huge Chrysler guy. He has a huge collection of eclectic Chryslers and a lot of convertibles. And I told him that, and he says, wow, you know, right now these cars are high. You know, this is like when did I do that? That was probably, well, no, Lauren, she was born in 90, so it was probably around 92 or 93, I guess, right around then. Yeah, probably right around then. And he says, you know, good luck. You know, you're not going to find anything. But he came up with this Challenger from a friend, and I thought he was nuts. I thought he, you know, had the wrong car, but, you know, it was a Challenger. It was the same thing. You know, I was thinking about, you know, even an Impala or a Caprice, but then the limiting factor is always the garage that you have to put it in.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
You know, these cars are big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does your car live outside, Chris, or does it get a garage?
No, it's got a garage, thankfully. But yeah, you can't put any, like, you can back it all the way up to the door when it's closed, and you just have enough room in the front to get between it. Like, if you took not even a quarter of a step back, you were hitting the wall. I mean, that's like, you can lean and you can hit the beams in the front of the, in the back of the garage. Yeah, it takes up the whole space. It really does.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that there's a guy in Westport, Connecticut's got a 68 Imperial convertible, and he's been trying to sell this thing for the last 3 or 4 months. He wants 10 grand for it. And I want to throw eight at him, just throw eight grand at him and drag this thing home. But I have a snowblower on the other side where the LeBaron is, and I can't get. I couldn't put like this Chrysler on the other side because I'll crash into the snowblower. So, and I need the snowblower.
Right.
more than I need the Imperial.
You have a yard, build a shed.
That's the next plan is actually, you're right, Ray, is to build a shed, but you're absolutely right. That's what I want to do. So, but yeah, it does live inside. I would never in a million years, I wouldn't want to leave this out. It would
rust away quick. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It would be a crime to do that, but that's, yeah, I just, when I saw it, you were the first person I was thinking of. I'm like, how do you fix a value on it? And I'm really, really glad that you brought that up, that I could price it like a Newport convertible.
Oh, yeah.
When I do go and sell it to buy that Imperial that I would really want.
Have you checked either of those cars for value recently, Chris?
What was that, Ray? I'm sorry.
Have you checked either of those models for value recently?
Well, this one, no. The Imperials are going for anywhere from 15 to 20 grand in very, very good condition. I mean, and I'm sure Steve would have his finger on the pulse more than I would. But
I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah.
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 The funny thing is, and another thing I wanted to bring up real fast, Steve, was there was a guy who was selling. I'm part of the C-Body club, so a forum. So I'm always checking, and they had a 57 Chrysler 300C convertible on auction, and it went for 30 grand. Now, the car hadn't moved. It hadn't been registered since, the same as this. It hasn't been registered since 73. It was complete, but it was old and tired. Yeah. And it went for 30 grand. And I'm like, oh, I would have just loved to buy that car and flip it because I didn't have the room for it. And now I just saw it. It's now on Hemmings. It's going there because it was in some obscure auction in Atlanta.
Right.
And it only went for 30 grand. Now Hemmings has picked it up because I went and looked again because I'm always looking for a 300C.
Right.
And bang, it comes up. I'm like, is that white one again? And then it's on Hemmings. I'm like, holy smokes, they're getting ready to auction this thing off at Hemmings. So, because I know 30 grand for a car like that was great.
And it's what kind of condition was it in?
It was definitely in a five, but it was all there.
Okay.
Uh-huh. It was all there, and it was a 300C convertible, and I was like, oh, I mean, I would love to, if I would take this thing and roll it down the hill with that boat and the trailer, if I can get the 300C in the garage.
Did you follow the auction at all to see what's going on?
Yeah, it went for 30 grand. No, they haven't auctioned the white one off at Hemmings yet. They have not auctioned it off yet, but you bet I'm going to watch that, and I'm sure it's going to go for 20 grand more. Whomever bought it he bought it just to flip it. That was it. Because I looked at that number and I'm like, that's way too low for that car. Way too low. There's one other 300C convertible on eBay. It's a red one. It's restored. And they have the balls to ask $189,000 for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and some clown shoes is going to probably pick it up, I'm sure.
Well, but you know, you have the luxury of being able to do a lot of this work with your own two hands. You know, if you talk about a 1950s 300C and you talk about the cost of bringing it into a shop to restore it, the chroming bill alone, you got to be talking $30,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so 189 is, you know, it does sound like a whole lot of money, and it probably is.
Right.
My guess is that's probably when I hear numbers like that, usually that's people pick the number. That's what it cost me to restore it.
Right.
That's what it's worth, but that's what it cost me to restore.
I thought of both of you guys this week because you're both dollars and cents guys. You know, you look at that aspect of the hobby.
Yes.
And my car is in for paint right now. Actually, Mike thought it was going to be painted yesterday. He sent me a text today. He said, didn't get painted. It got jammed out. He goes, it'll get painted tomorrow.
The GTO you're talking about?
Yeah.
Wow.
So what I had to do was I had sent out a bunch of the stainless steel trim a couple of years ago to a guy who did it for me. And I know he wasn't going to do any kind of repairs. I didn't have any major dents in it, but I said, okay, just polish it. Let me get it back. I never even opened it because it was all, you know, wrapped up in this cellophane.
Right.
So now there were a few more pieces that came off last minute. I found a new guy. I told you about that guy, Chris, down by Mikey T's old shop.
Yeah.
A guy that Gerard from Rolling Thunder uses. He's very good. So I brought him some stuff. And now Mike calls me during the week and says, listen, I'm opening up this trim that you have. He goes, and I got a few pieces that have a few little dings and I don't know, you know, I said, yeah, the guy didn't repair. He goes, I don't know if you want to address that before we put it on. I was like, you know what? It's already been polished. Now that I have a new guy, I said, let me come pick it up and I'll bring it to him. So I brought him four more pieces of the windshield trim. But the point is, I don't know what this is going to cost to have this stuff done. And someone said to me, you know, why didn't you just buy repro stuff?
And I
said, you know, my mantra's been, I kind of want to use as many original parts on the car as I can. Not that my car is stock by any means. It's just kind of a thing that I feel. I want to use as many original parts. And then I said to myself, am I willing to pay more to refinish original stuff than it would cost to buy repro? And I have to stand by my gut feeling that, yeah, the repro I don't think is always as good. It doesn't always look as good. Sometimes you can pick it out on a car.
Oh, we can. I know you and I have walked up to vehicles, right? Yeah. You and I and pointed and went, that's repro.
So you know, and sometimes it's not even just a matter of being able to pick it out. Sometimes, and I've seen this happen many times with repro stuff, it could be trim, it could be hoods, it could be doors. You know, you try to save a little bit of money because it does make sense often to buy the repro stuff rather than refinish the original stuff. But the problem is what happens when you give it to the shop to install it and it doesn't fit properly.
Exactly.
Now, you know, I have this old saying, if it came off the car, it's going back on the car.
That's right.
Agreed.
This stuff was from the car. It wasn't even from an, it was from that
from
car.
That car. Yeah.
That car.
So, yeah. I think you're on the right track. Well, I would have done the same thing.
I'll tell you a story. I had those cars, the Pontiacs, the A-bodies, always have problems when you put bigger tires on the front. They'd always clip the wheel well, the back of the fenders, you know?
Yep.
I had that problem back in the day. I couldn't put anything bigger than an F70 on the front of that car, F70 14. And I was amazed that now I have 245 40 17s on the car,
mm-hmm.
and they don't hit.
Right.
I'm like, these things, well, yeah, I know why. It's the small, the sidewall size.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a change. The right front fender was an original, but it had some issues. And Mike says to me, listen, I think you'd be better off buying a reproduction fender for that side.
Mm-hmm.
This is because the time and labor we're going to have to put into getting this right, it may just be better off to buy the new piece.
That's exactly it, yeah.
So I did, at a cost of about $700 all
Jesus.
Well, the fender was $490, and then there was a $150 shipping charge. And a $20 boxing fee. So, you know, it was like seven. So, okay, we put it on. It looked beautiful. It's a good Mark fender. Beautiful.
Oh, okay,
it's even
yeah.
heavier than the original.
Yep.
But now Mike called me in again this week. I went down there Friday. He says, I got a little bit of an issue now. I'm like, what happened? He goes, the tire is clipping the back of the fender. I'm like, he goes, was it doing that before? I'm like, you don't see marks on the tire, do you? He goes, no, I don't. I'm like, it wasn't. So what happened is now that Steve set the nose, the fender on again and readjusted the nose, the fender is apparently in a little bit of a different position right. than the other one was. And, you know, maybe that body line was off a little and we didn't care in the past. Now that it's all straight and correct, now, Houston, we have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, when we put the trim on that, you know, the stainless trim, that's actually another little skosh of metal right. in the way. He says, how do you want to handle this? I said, you're the body man. You should be telling me how to. So what we agreed to do is I said, Mike, trim the back of the fender. Trim it, cut it, dress it off. I said, and then paint it. I said, I said, when I go to the Concours d'Elegance, I don't think the judge is going to look at that piece of my fender.
Right.
Obviously, I'm not going to be ever going to a show like that. Or probably a show in general.
Yeah. I said,
you know, make it fit. I said, that, you know, the lower fender opening is probably one of the best places you could trim something that no one's ever going to see. You know,
yeah.
You're right, Steve. Again, there's always issues.
I'm a big believer. If it came off, it's going back on. And I believe in refinishing whatever you have to do, unless it's just not available. You know, I'd rather spend the money to refinish it than get a nice, shiny new reproduction piece.
One of the things I have to do, the car is going to go back together with the original bumpers on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to look like hell because they need to be re-chromed. I'm shopping around for a chrome place that will chrome, again, my bumpers.
Right.
And I haven't gotten a great answer. Everybody's real expensive. Of course, they're all out of state. So
did
if you
ask me about that, or did somebody else ask me about that recently?
I may have, but if I didn't, I am now. If you have any resources or any places that you could recommend, I'd be happy to hear about them.
Well, everybody knows about Paul's and whatnot. They're expensive. They have a long wait. But there's a place that I've used a few times that I know a lot of shops that use. And the couple of times I've used them, I've been really happy with them. And it's called Speed and Sport Chrome. And it's somewhere in Texas. I'm almost sure it's in Houston.
Okay.
And the prices were competitive. The quality of the work was just as good as Paul's. Maybe because they're a little less known, they're less expensive, but they were reasonably priced. Everything came back. I think there was still a 2 or 3 month wait, you know, but it's not a year.
Right.
And the work was great, and it was no complaints whatsoever. And I see cars still now that we did 15 years ago, and the chrome is still nice on
okay.
it.
Wow.
Okay. Do you know anybody out there or just?
No, I haven't used them in probably 5 years, and I don't know anyone there. I just sent them because somebody told me about them 10 or 15 years
okay.
ago, and they were very good.
Yeah, I've run down a few leads, and everything has come back like, you know, not good. Actually, there's that place in Mineola that's still a Nassau plating.
Nassau chromium plating, yeah.
Yeah, that's still one that I haven't checked, but you know, and I don't care what it is. It's like asking about a mechanic or a heart surgeon. For every person that tells you this place is the best in the world and it's great, someone else will tell you don't go there. They're the worst.
Right.
But now think about how much it's going to cost you to ship something like that down there. It's going to cost you what? I'm thinking, I may be wrong, but it may be like $1,000 a bumper.
Oh,
if you think.
I don't know.
No.
Think it's going to be less than that?
Maybe at the absolute most, if you package it right, $100 a bumper at the most.
No, but I mean to get it done and get it shipped back.
Oh, you're talking about, I'm sorry.
Yeah, complete. All, you know, send them out, get it back. I'm thinking
probably not far off. I don't think that much, but if I'd say maybe somewhere between 700 and 1,000 a bumper. So you're not far off. Yeah, I mean, the alternative is to buy a reproduction. But, you know, then the reproductions, you get them, you see the little sanding scratches in them. And
yes.
Depends on what you want.
I'll tell you this. We've been working on Mike Chevelle, the 71 Chevelle Supersport. And a couple of weeks ago, I went in and he had, well, Friday, the bumpers weren't on. Saturday, I went back, the bumpers were on. And I said, oh, they got the bumpers on. And he says, yeah. So there was an issue with one of the rear lights. And I said, listen, he was trying to work around it through the bumper. I said, Mike, why don't we just take the bumper off? You know, I'm here. I'll help you. We'll take the bumper off and we'll fix this.
Right.
He's like, after what it took me to put these bumpers on, I'm not taking. Now, that's a body man. He's been a body man all his life.
Yeah.
What repros, and they looked beautiful. They were from, I think, Ground Up or the other place that does all the Chevy
CPG
repros.
CPG or something, yeah.
Yeah, a known place. And they looked beautiful. The chrome was nice, but he said they just didn't fit just quite right. There was a lot of finagling that had to go on. And I'm like, geez, it's only a bumper with two bumper brackets. How hard could that be? You know?
And I hear that from body shops all the time. Not so much with bumpers, but, you know, fenders and things like that. They spend as much time making it fit as you spend on the panel.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. Yep. I'm doing that now with this one, Steve. The doors don't line up because whatever body guy took care of this thing, one of the fenders doesn't line up on the passenger side. One of the door doesn't line up on the passenger side. So I'm literally finagling. I don't mind adjusting, but boy, does it take a ton of time.
Oh yeah. So,
oh my gosh. And trying not to chip the paint on it is a joy in itself.
When you talk to people and they say to you, why does it cost so much to make a concourse quality car? It's because, you know, you can make a show quality car, you know, for X number of dollars, but to make a concourse quality car, it takes 10 times as long.
Yeah, sure.
That extra 5%, you know?
Sure. It really is. And that extra 5% takes triple the amount of work that the first 95% took. You know, that's the truth.
I'm seeing that with the Chevelle because we're at the end stages. And I had the realization that, you know, all the work we did in the past was, you know, gross work, big jobs, big stuff, you know. But now when you get to the everything else has been done and you're working on a subassembly that's going to live with all this other stuff that's done, now you see the difference in the disparity in, you know, in what's going on in the look and the fit and the finish. Mm-hmm. So it gets monumentally harder as you get to the end to make it
right,
you know, to the same standard. And
Yeah, sure is. I would think with the with a thousand, if you have $2,000 to spend on bumpers, you can find NOS bumpers. I think it's going to take some work. It's going to take
these
some
days.
Work.
That's a little
I bet you can. Well, the look at you're not looking at a bumper that was like on mine. There's only like 1,400, not even 1,400. No, it's just the convertibles. But let's say there's like what 20,000 of them.
Yeah.
Let's just throw it out. How many Le Manses and Tempests?
Oh yeah,
because they shared the same bumpers.
There were 50,000 GTOs that year. Yeah.
Right. So there's gotta be perfect condition bumpers out there.
Then again, you know, I'd be curious because the guy who has them, like I remember years ago, it was always like, "Hey, I got an NOS quarter panel." Like, "Oh my God, you got the Holy Grail!" You know, but guys always knew, even in the '80s, they were asking like, you know, $800 for that quarter panel. You know. Even though there were some dealerships that probably still had them stuck in the back room somewhere.
Sure.
I bet you the bumpers would be the same way. Guys will be asking like the, you know, super.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think if you were looking for Bonneville bumpers, you might be right. You might be able to find them for $1,000 a piece. Some, you know, a little bit more obscure car, but a GTO that people have been collecting for decades.
Right.
I think if there's an NOS set out there, I think they're going to be really expensive.
You think so? Okay.
You know, with things that are chrome also, you have to be careful with NOS because people don't think about this that often, but it's going to be a 50, 60 year old bumper. Even if it's NOS, it's going to have aged 50 or 60 years in the box.
Yeah.
You know, and true. They do dull.
Where was it stored? How was it stored?
Right. Yeah.
That is true. No, you're right. But I'm always thinking like,
The repro ones I'm looking at, I'm looking around for my catalog, but I don't see it. I think I have one upstairs. I think they get like around 600 a pop for the repros.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. So that's a bridge I'll have to cross. I'll be driving a painted car with ugly bumpers.
I don't care. Yeah, but you have the threat of taking that bumper off and putting the bumper on with fresh paint.
True.
Want to do that job
I
once.
Mean, the good thing is there's two bolts on either side of the bracket. So once you get under there, because I just did it, you know, and I took them off again. Pull those bolts in the bumper, you just pull it straight forward.
And
just make sure you have a second set of hands there.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking two more guys. And a case of beer.
Oh, yeah. Leave that for later. I know. Wow. Right. There's always that threat. There's always that. Well, I was talking to Mike's shop manager, Ronnie, and he's like, hey, he goes, you know what? Because it's come up a few times. He says, you're the only guy I've ever seen who doesn't seem excited that his car is getting painted. I said, Ronnie, I absolutely hate it. I said, I'm beside myself. I said, I loved it in Prime. I said, and I'll tell you why. He goes, what the hell's the matter with you? I said, I'll tell you. I said, I know the car's going to get damaged in my garage. Yeah. You know, I said, every car I've had in my garage that was either new or painted got damaged in my garage by something falling on it or hitting it. I said, and how can I be happy about that?
You know? It's true.
Yeah, it is. It's a mixed feeling.
And I was like, you know, we were at Mike's house this week working on the Chevelle, and he's got tight quarters too. And I said, you know, Mike, I said, we had to move. We're going to take the Chevelle out. So he goes, okay, hold on. Let me move. Yeah. I know what he had to do. He had to get all the keys because he had to move his wife's car, his car. He had to move the ladder out of the way, and he had to move the golf cart out of the way.
After a while, it's like, screw it.
Just to get the Chevelle out. I said, listen, it's like we all live in Brooklyn, but we don't. And I said, I told my wife, my dream, and I don't even know if it's my dream anymore. I don't even know if I care, was like to have the parking situation that I could get out any one car or motorcycle without moving another one.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm getting to the point where it's like, just sell it all. It doesn't matter. It's never going to happen.
Well, you know what? I got to that point a couple of years ago, and I got to tell you, it's worked for me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to move anything to get to anything anymore.
Nice.
And
good
it's great.
For you.
I love it. It's fantastic.
Good for you.
It's a dream. It really is a dream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing that's good about it is if you can work on these cars yourself, which you and I, all three of us can, you sure. don't want to give someone else to work on it, to no. give it to someone else. So the more stuff you have, every weekend, every waking moment, you're working on them.
Yep.
Right.
The less you have, the more free time you have.
Right.
You know, Steve, that is exactly why this Chrysler is going to go up on the chopping block very soon because of that, because it needs so many little things, and every little thing takes a weekend. Yeah. And I would much rather have that Imperial sitting there where I know I could just run a rag over it, change the oil, make sure everything is good, and go.
But you don't know what that car needs either.
No, you don't. No, you don't. Yeah. No, you don't. But it's just like this. You know, this took a couple of months to get it set, but once it was set and running, but now it needs little things. The seats are shot. The door panels are shot. You know, it's all that that late 60s Chrysler soft stuff that just is impossible to find.
You know, we call that the rolling restoration.
Yeah.
And the beauty is you get to drive it as you work on it and enjoy it. So, I mean, and like me, you're like me, Crystal. It's like, well, you know, people say, well, don't you want to finish that? No, I don't care.
No.
I'm driving the car. I'm happy. You know, I'll get to it. And when I get to it, it'll be done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want to finish this.
I'll tell you another little story that happened. Mike said to me the other day at the shop, he goes, come here, I got to show you something. He goes, because I just have to tell you. I'm like, okay. So he goes to the front of the car. You know, he's been moving my car. He won't let anybody else move it. You know, so that's good.
Yeah.
But he opens the hood. I'm like, did the engine fall out? Like, you know, I'm trying to think. My mind's racing. What happened that he's got to show me under the hood? And then he shows me. He says, after all that nose realignment, Mike started the car to move it, and he heard this clanging noise like hellaciously.
Don't tell me the fan's hitting something.
The fan was hitting the fan shroud. And I have a metal fan shroud, right? So the guy who worked on the car never checked that. And he was moving the radiator support because I had to bring him the bushings for it and all. So Mike said, luckily, this fan shroud is slotted. It was a matter of just loosening the bolts and moving it. And it lined. But it took the paint, the coating off of the edge of each of the seven clutch fan blades. And I'm looking at it. I said, okay.
Okay.
He goes, I want to fix this for you. He goes, I figure if you take it off, you know, I'll paint it. You know, it's a beautiful gloss black. He says, you know, we want to make it right. I said, Mike, the only problem is that's powder coated. And he said, it's like, you know, what am I going to do? It's like, yeah, it happens, right? I mean,
what is the material of the fan blades? What are the fan blades made out of? Are they steel or aluminum?
You know, that's a good question. This is the first time I've seen the color. They're probably like a light steel. I don't think
they're steel.
Because if they were aluminum, I'd say leave them. They'll just have shiny edges, but they're not going to rust or anything, you know?
Right. I was thinking about just painting like white stripes on the edge, like a propeller, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah, that'll work.
And that's a good idea.
Well, you know, in reality, the fan is set up half in and half out of the shroud. You really don't see too much of it. I'm almost thinking about, there's my first, like everybody talks about the first dent. There's my first scratch.
Right.
Leave it. You know, just leave it. You're going to get lucky.
Thinking like Tester's model paint. You just run with a little brush. You just run a little black along the edge and that's it.
Right.
Call it a day.
Right.
Yeah.
Call it a day.
You know what else you could actually use if you wanted to? I don't know how great it would look, but at least it wouldn't come off. You could use like that, put a little bit of that Pour 15 on a brush.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That it'll
unbalance the fan.
That's a good yeah, never mind.
What's that vibration?
415. It does have some weight to it. But no. Yeah. I mean, I could use, you know, black spray paint. I mean, anything could, you know, it's just a fan. It's not a big
deal.
You know, that it just illustrates the point that these are the things that happen in the course of having a vehicle worked on, you know.
Right. Yeah. And that's the reason why.
First thing that happens, you're doing great.
Yeah, that's what I feel. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe I should just leave it, and that becomes my battle scar. Maybe that's the thing that, you know.
Yeah. No, I thought the same thing with the TR6. There was always a dent in the passenger door. I never fixed it. Mm-hmm. I never fixed it because that was like you say, Ray, that was my battle scar. That was the one that I knew was always going to be there. And as long as that was there, because the second I fixed that, it would have been done. And that would have been, like you said, catastrophe.
Right.
At that point. So yep. Leave it. And yeah, so I'm the same way. I could never drive a concourse vehicle. I don't know how people do. I really don't know how people own and maintain concourse vehicles. I really don't.
They get trailing.
Yeah. I don't know how, because you really have to change. It's a whole complete lifestyle as far as I'm concerned.
Unless you're Wayne Carini.
Who?
Wayne Carini from up by Ewing, Connecticut. From
F40 Motorsports, from Chasing Classic Cars. Yeah, Chasing
Classic. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. All right. That guy.
Yeah. So, Steve, you know, we were going to talk about it on the show, but the thing you sent me about Phantom Works, appraising that the Chevelle.
Yeah.
I remember that car. I remember when they built it. It was early on in that run. Was it season one or two?
I don't know. I had never heard of it. This just came, you know, through ordinary channels just for an appraisal. I didn't know about them. That's how I learned about them.
Chris, it's a 71 Chevelle, and the owner, they had it modified for a paraplegic. So the seats came out, and they put they changed the door, made the door longer. They did a whole, reconstructed the side of the car.
Yeah. Wow.
So this guy could get in. And I think what Dan had said on the show was he was doing it. There was an altruistic bent to it where I think he wasn't charging the regular rate, or he was donating time or money or whatever. I don't know. Because shortly after that, of course, the internet blows up saying how Dan Schwartz are paying. He's a liar, and he did it all for money, and he didn't do what he said he was going to do. And I mean, you follow that for a little while, and it's like, all right, you know what? It's probably, I don't know what the, I'm not privy to that. So I figured it was one of those internet things, but the car came up now to be sold, and Steve is asked to appraise it.
How do you appraise that?
You know, it's actually easy, because it's first of all, it's not a real SS. They're forthright about that. It's just a Chevelle, and I've appraised plenty of cars that have been converted for handicapped use. So it's you just add a certain premium for the conversion. It's not a particularly hard car to appraise. Mm-hmm. I may have been mistaken when I sent it to you, because the only reason that I even knew about Phantom Works is because the current owner of the car said, if you're interested in the history of the car, here's the link to the car. Okay. So the link took me to Phantom Works, and I may be under the mistaken impression, I could be wrong, I thought that this was an ongoing altruistic thing that they did for veterans, but maybe it's just this one car. Maybe it is problematic, as Ray was saying. I really don't know the answer to it. But it just, if it was an ongoing thing where they did them for these warrior, for these wounded warriors, that's why I thought it might be a good idea for the show. But if it's not, it's not.
Well, I'll tell you this. We've had Dan Short on the show. If you need to get in touch with him, I can give you his contact information. He has said on the show early on, he's a veteran. He was a pilot. He was a fighter pilot.
Wow.
Yeah, that guy's got some provenance. And there's a lot of content. Like anybody on TV, there's contention about the person and about the business. Yeah, and,
right.
You know, whatever. And I know through his show, I watched it through the beginning. It's off the air. He went through a whole thing of how he ended the show because he felt it was ripping the business apart. It was just bad. So he stopped it. And there's contention about that too, of course, because nobody believes anything that they hear or see. We had him on the show and you know, he told us what he told us. So it is what it is, as far as I'm concerned. He did say through the show that he's shown that he works with veterans and causes. He didn't go over the top with it to really make it the focal point of the show, but he kind of, you know, let it hint a little that he was going to do something here or there for someone who was really in need. So I it wasn't really like the cornerstone of his show. He wasn't, you know, he's in business to make money. That was his business.
Right.
So that was that. But I found it interesting that somebody else would buy. I mean, that car was literally gutted, if I remember right. And
yes, it was.
Like I said, I think the door was even reconfigured.
It was the driver's side door. They made like a third door where the left rear quarter panel would be.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Holy smokes.
So I guess if someone buying it is a paraplegic or needs a car like that, hey, what? It's cool to get a muscle, get a 70. It is a 70. Get a 70 Chevelle instead of a minivan, you know.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it read on the website. And that's why I thought it was an ongoing thing, because if you go to the website, at least the link that they sent me, it said something about to the effect of, you know, we build these cars for these veterans who would rather drive a classic American muscle car rather than a minivan. So I didn't think it was a one-shot deal. I thought it was an ongoing thing, you know, with a good underlying cause. But I could be wrong.
You know, I have the blurb here. It says Phantom Works Insight, Wounded Wheels is a program designed to bring together disabled heroes and disabled classic automobiles in a way never thought of previously. Wounded Wheels will restore a dilapidated American classic car and tailor it to a specific disabled veteran, and in so will help rebuild the life and return mobility, freedom to a deserving veteran. So I remember him saying that on the show early on, and again, it never really got expanded upon. I think maybe, yeah, maybe he backed off from it. Maybe he saw it was going to be too much trouble. Maybe, you know, he could have been flooded by emails and calls of like, hey, do my car, you know, who knows? And he just,
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Still trying to make a little money here, folks.
I was telling Ray, I was talking to my financial guy. I mean, my guy, we're very, actually very good friends. We've been together, for about over 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned him over the years. I was like, did you ever hear about something like this? And he was like, no.
Yeah. It's new, you know, and trying to educate people, as I've learned through that, and I will never do it again. Trying to educate people about something is very, very expensive. And, you know, then somebody else comes in after you've educated them and benefits from it when you're done and tired of it. Yeah, so we're not doing that. That's okay. You know, I have this woman who's a client who gave me this saying probably 10 years ago, which I love. And it goes through my head every single day. And she said to me, I never lose. Sometimes I win and sometimes I learn. And you know what?
She's right.
I can't tell you how many times a day I say that to myself.
Yep. You never lose.
I think it's great.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You, if you're smart, you never lose. And that means that you learn from the mistake. Okay, you lost some cash, but you learn from the mistake.
Exactly. Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So you learn. Yeah.
No, it's true. There used to be a guy on the radio, and I wish I could remember what his name. He used to be on the AM, and he said he didn't invest in anything in paper. He didn't invest in stocks, bonds, anything like
really?
That. He invested in everything that if you dropped it, it made a noise. That was his.
There are a lot of people who still do that, believe it or not. Yeah.
Yeah, that was his criteria. And I wish I could remember the name. It was like, it wasn't Bernard Meltzer. It was one of those.
That's the first one that came to mind for me when you were saying it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of those guys on the AM about 20, 30 years ago. And I remember him saying that. He says, I invest on everything that if you drop it, it makes a noise.
Right.
Are you sure it wasn't Lionel?
No, my boy Lionel.
Lionel.
I love Lionel.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, it's something that I always wanted, you know, I always had an interest in, just as you do, because I'm not like Ray. I never was, where it's like you buy it, you keep it, it's like a big hole in the ground that you just throw money in. I always that's right. That's a boat. But that's why I always try and look at the bottom line. And if I end up going over and I know that I can't sell the car for what I put into it,
right.
If I can't make a profit on the car, I usually keep the car and drive it.
Well, you know, that's fine. Yeah. That's sweat equity. It works, you know,
right.
You get your enjoyment out. You get your equity in another way. That's all. And that's fine.
Right. So that's why with this, I definitely have the investment on this thing under 10 grand. So I'm hoping that if I can get like 12 out of it, I'd be, or 13 out of it, I'd be hysterical.
I can imagine that you won't.
Yeah, I think you should, Chris. I mean, I'm no expert, but
thank
yeah.
you.
You know, yeah. Nowadays with everything that's going on, you know, who really knows? But I can tell you, I speak to dealers, you know, the guys on Long Island, I speak to them all over the country, but the guys on Long Island, I'm sure you know, like Hollywood Motors and, you know, Motor Car Classics and Farmingdale and Aventura out east, they're selling cars left and right. I mean, the number of sales, and the prices and the number are not down, you know, and I was right. just talking to him the other day and I said, why do you think that is? And he said, well, this is Mike over at Hollywood. And he said, well, think about it, Steve. He said, what's everybody doing? I said, they're sitting at home staring at their computers. And he said, if you like cars, what are you staring at? And he's absolutely right. And this is, sales are not down. You know, for a week, everything came to a halt, but then it went right back to normal.
So, that's for sure. That's for sure. And that's what I'm hoping for. Because, I mean, I don't mind. I don't mind flipping them. And I had a laugh because I was looking at what I invested in the TR6. It was, I think I didn't lose on that car, but I certainly didn't make a lot, but I looked at, and it's like you say, there was a lot of sweat equity in there. The time you can never get back, but the knowledge at least you have, but I'm looking at, like, I actually reached out to Moss Motors and I said, now I've been dealing with Moss Motors for 20 years.
Right.
And I said to them, I said, can you give me a tally of what I've spent as a client?
You sure you want to do that?
You know what he's told me? He literally looked at the whole thing and he went, you spent $1,500. I was like, what? He says, yep. He says, $1,498. That's what you spent. And that's what I did. I bought little dopey things, little stupid trinkets and lenses and stupid stuff. Wow. I didn't buy anything big on that car.
Well, you know, I did just for one of my columns, I did a study probably 3 years ago on my Cougar. Mm-hmm. How much money have I put into that car?
Oh.
I've owned that car almost 50 years.
You wrote a column on that.
I did write a column.
I read it.
And now that car, it's been painted. That's the only thing that's been done to it. It's never been restored. The interior is original. The engine's never been. I mean, it's been maintained.
I paid
insurance on it. $180,000.
Yeah.
Oh. Oil changes, inspections, insurance, the paint job, the alternator. The good car. It doesn't. That's what you spend on a car over 50 years.
I know, the beginning of this year.
The first inspection
was due in January, and I did a quick tally of just the inspections I have to do, and it was like, you know, what was it, like $300 or $400? Like, geez, that's just, you know, that's before you do anything, you got to do that. Like,
Well,
the wise people that I speak to, I can't tell you how many people's houses I go to appraise or inspect cars. They go, I have every receipt for every penny I've ever put into this car.
Wow.
And I say to them, how much is it? And he says, I have no idea. I don't want to add it.
No idea.
Those are smart people.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
Those are smart people.
Wow, $180,000 on a Cougar, on a 71 Cougar.
I have other folders, but this one is all just like receipts and things for the Pontiac. And
you don't want to add that up.
The same thing. I have Ames receipts.
Right.
And I don't, you know, I look at them for reference, but I refuse to tally it.
Wow.
I'm just not going to do it.
Well, you're not going to do it in front of your wife, that's for sure.
Well, I don't even want to do it in private. I really don't. Because then you say, hey, you know what, like you said, it was my choice to do this to something that gives me enjoyment in the car I want to do. So that's my justification right there.
Yeah. It's, you know, guys? I don't want to be rude, but I didn't see the time, and I'm supposed to have my wife in downtown Smithtown in 9 minutes.
Oh, you better fly then.
Bye.
Yeah. Fortunately, there's no traffic nowadays. But
right. Steve will be back in touch. We'll see if we get you back in with us next week. And
that's fine. Yes. Whatever works for you guys is great.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Right,
thank you very much.
All right.
A pleasure.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside. We remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose the shop where you have your car fixed. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, including 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with rental car arrangements if needed. We're considered an essential business and are still open, providing touchless drop-off and pickup services. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.